Hello and welcome to The Front Page, where we have a very special show for you this morning, looking ahead to five fantastic days at Royal Ascot. The most glamorous of flat racing is brought to you across the next week, and we'll be looking at all 5 days, some fantastic racing, and potentially the race of 2025. We're hearing what the panel think will win during the week, as well as some of the hot topics. But also, we'll be discussing a serious issue from the racing world, with MPs set to tackle some of racing's huge product problems. Liam Head joins me in the studio, our Lambourne correspondent. And wow, we have a special guest for Royal Ascot. We really got come for the big guns. David Jennings, your first time in the studio for The Front Page. Is this as big as it gets?
Yeah, big in stature, that's about it. This is the highlight of my week. Coming in here is better than 5 days at Royal Ascot.
And give us a reason why. You've got loads of shows to do this morning.
We're a pretty busy week, yeah. 8 o'clock every morning, we have Good Morning Royal Ascot. And we've got some fantastic guests, including our very own Tom Siegel, Mr. Pricewise. We've got Paul Keely on a couple of days. We've got Kevin Blake, the trifectinator himself from the Derby, he's on. And loads of other guests throughout the week. So what better way to start your day, James, than Good Morning Royal Ascot. 8 o'clock every morning. Did I say it enough? 8 o'clock. It's 8 o'clock.
Yeah, on the Racing Post YouTube channel. Don't worry, though, we'll still be getting David Jennings' fancies on this show, as well as Liam's. Let's get straight into the action. We'd better start on Tuesday. St James's Palace Stakes. We've got the three classic winners. The English Guineas winner, Ruling Court. Field of Gold, who so impressive at the Curragh. And then the Henry Matisse, the winner in France. DJ, we'll come straight back to you. Is this the race of 2025?
Whew, probably is, yeah. We're only in mid-June, though. So, like, it's not a great feat. But, it's a cracker. I think it's fairly predictable, though, is it? It'll be interesting to see what you guys think. I think Field of Gold is the best horse in training. I think he's going to be the story of the season. I think he is the story of the season so far. Mm-hmm. And to me, I just want to see him do what he did in the Curragh again. It's obviously going to be tactically very different. And I don't think it's going to be as smooth, potentially, as it was at the Curragh, because it was just, literally, it was like a computer game for Colin Keane, because he just did that, pressed the button, gone. And it's not going to be as straightforward. It's a better race around the bend at Ascot where silly stuff can happen. But I just watched him in the Craven, watched him in the Guineas when he was beaten, and watched him last time. And the minute he was beaten in the Guineas, I said, that horse will never be beaten again. And I'm going to stand by that statement. And hopefully he wins this impressively, and then we can dream about an eclipse, because a mile and two around Sandown, that's going to be pretty special.
You've been in his show for about 5 minutes. You would have given a big statement, which we love to see.
But I think, do you not think he's the best horse in training at the minute? Do you?
I think so as well, yeah. I agree with that. I just think, with what he did at the Curragh, it was almost just too easy for Colin Keane. Like, he knew exactly what he was going to do, when he was going to do it, and as soon as he hit that button, off he went. He is the one that they have to get past to win.
If he was in the Queen Anne or the Prince of Wales this week, I think he'd be favoured for both.
I'd agree with you. Definitely agree. We mentioned Colin Keane, who's now Judmont's number one. Does that change anything from the chances of, not the chances of Field of Gold, but for him, he's now the Judmont number one. This is his time, really, to show. That was almost his shop window in the Curragh. He's got the opportunity. We know what happened before in Newmarket. Is this pressure change? Is he someone who's, you know him better than most? Is it someone that's, the pressure might get to him? Is he going to be steely as usual?
He's just a lovely lad. He's definitely the pressure won't. No, he's so cool. What I would say about this move is it's better late than never, because it's something that probably should have happened 2 or 3 years ago, because we've seen it, year in, year out with him. And, like, he's not, like, Ger Lyons, in fairness to Ger, he said he can't bring him to the level that he should be at. And it's a big move for Colin to basically leave Ger, even though he'll be riding a lot of the good horses, obviously, still. But I think he's more than ready for it. I think he's got the demeanour for it. I think he's got the ability for it. And he couldn't be getting this job at a better time, because you go through the Judmont team. Can you remember a time, certainly in recent years, where they've had a better team over various different distances? You even look at the Commonwealth Cup, where they've got, like, the second favourite, then the St James's Palace, they've got the favourite. And going forward, I think personally that Kalpana is going to be one of the stars of the season. I loved her run in the Tattersalls Gold Cup in Ireland. So he's got real big horses, big name horses, the biggest in Field of Gold. So it's a great time to get the job. And I just you know, I hope it goes well for him. There'll be a lot of people pointing to his Ascot record, and that's something I know Matt Chapman has been going on about, you know, the fact that he has got such a poor record at Ascot. I did an analysis of it last year, and with the prices and all that, he hasn't ridden that many. He has ridden fancied runners that haven't ran well, but he was really good in Villanova Queen when he broke his duck. And I think it's an anomaly. We'll see this week how he rides the track, but I can't see the track being any barrier to success for Colin. I think he's a super jockey, and I think this week, put it this way, this time next week, I think we'll be saying that's why he got the Jodman job.
We'll move on to rest of Tuesday, Liam, which is pretty phenomenal day's racing. The Coventry looks really deep, loads of interesting two-year-olds. Got a 23-runner Group 1 in the King Charles, and Rosalian versus Notable Speech, the two Guineas winner from last season. It's rare we see both those horses in training and taking each other on. Tuesday, an absolute belter, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, it usually is at this meeting that the sort of quality of races that we see. And as you touched on there, to have that many runners, 23 in a Group 1 is just, it's amazing, really. It's a proper betting heat. Just on the Queen and the first race that kicks us off this week. Huge race, obviously. Rosalian, finished third last time out in the Lockinge after such a long time out. And obviously this has been the target for Richard Hannon for a while. He was so impressive last year, and it's really exciting to see those that take him on. Obviously Dancer Gemini for Lambourne. Roger Teal obviously came to within a neck of lead artist in the Lockinge. So it's, you know, it is a brilliant race, and exciting to see what happens.
As good a Queen Anne I can remember for a while in terms of strength and depth. I mean, we might not have a Frankel or something of that ilk, but
And there's so many different strands to it, because you start off with Rosalian, who obviously was the best three-year-old miler last year, and then we didn't see him for the second half of the season. And you're kind of saying, is he going to be as good as we thought he was going to be after that setback? And he kind of looked like he might be in the Lockinge. And then you've got Notable Speech, who I think will be better in a straight mile than round a bend. And I think William Buick thinks the same. Then you kind of pick up the others in the race, the likes of Dancing Gemini, whose profile is remarkably similar to Sharon, who won the race last year. Like, it is quite remarkable to win the race at Doncaster, to win the same race at Sandown, and to finish second in the Lockinge, kind of going, oh, was he actually the best horse in the Lockinge? And that's what we were saying about Sharon last year, and that's what we're saying about Dancing Gemini this year. And I know, obviously, Rosalian and Notable Speech, they're the kind of sexy horses going into this season, but you kind of look back at the Lockinge, and at the line, for all that Notable Speech and Rosalian hadn't had a run, and they will come on fitness-wise, like, Dancing Gemini was a good bit ahead of them, as was Lead Artist. I just thought the way the race unfolded straight after the race, I kind of thought probably Dancing Gemini would beat Lead Artist when they meet again. And then you got 2.5 lengths, basically, for the others to make up. And it's a fair difference in price between Dancing Gemini and Rosalian, given the distance ahead Dancing Gemini was ahead of Rosalian at Newbury. I think at the price, I think it's got to be Dancing Gemini is the value.
Do you think so? Yeah, I mean, I was looking this morning. Dancing Gemini is fourth favourite now at around 6-1. I think that's huge. I mean, I'd be surprised if he goes off that price in the day. Like DJ said, I mean, it's got such a similar profile to Sharon, who obviously we know what happened there last year. So, I'm very happy to sort of take that price.
And I think as well, like, Royal Ascot always throws up these kind of mental kind of stories kind of thing. And Kieran Schumacher winning the first race on a horse who he wouldn't have ridden if he wasn't basically let go by the Gosens. He'd be riding Lead Artist. And he's now riding Dancing Gemini at a meeting where he could have had this amazing book of rides, and now he doesn't. And for him to start off winning the Queen Anne, that's just a very Royal Ascot thing to happen. So it mightn't be what the kind of form experts would be saying as a good reason for what's going to win the Queen Anne, but I just have this feeling something like that is going to happen.
Yeah, not in the trends, is it? It's hard to nail
it
down.
No, it's not in the trends. No. Kevin Morley won't be putting it in, but I just have a sneaky suspicion something like that could happen.
What's the word in Lambourne about Anmat, of course, in Wednesday's Prince of Wales Estates?
Really good, really good. I think fantastic performance in the Gold Cup there in Ireland. I think, as we all know, I think the race fitness the lack of race fitness just got the better of him in that race against Los Angeles. Really excited to see these two meet up again. And it's going to be me versus DJ in this race, I think. I just think that he worked, I was speaking to Owen Burrows last week, he worked really well. You know, he's come out of the race tremendously well. And I think the fact that he's got that race under his belt now, I think he's going to go right up there. And
just, are you in with the lads now? Can you get stuff off the record now?
I'm getting stuff, yeah.
It leads me very on. Before we come on to DJ in Los Angeles, is there any sort of whispers from Ascot?
Yeah, come on, this is what we want. This is what we came for. What?
For the rest of the week? What,
give us the Lamborn Dark Horse.
Under the radar?
I like American Gulf in the Coventry for Paul and Oliver Cole. Just outside Lamborn, but we'll class it as West Berkshire. Ran tremendously well to win at Windsor a few weeks ago. I was there at Windsor, absolutely bolted up to him by, I think, 3 1/4 lengths, something. He's got a good reputation, and he was. I was speaking to Oliver Cole at Newbury last week, and he was really sweet on the chances of American Gulf.
Twisting Physics won that day as well, so yes. The stable is important.
Yeah, stable's in very good form.
DJ, you mentioned the lads. The lads, of course, have got Los Angeles to look forward to in that same race. I mean, he's got an interesting profile. Perhaps doesn't get the recognition he deserves because he's a real classy horse.
Yeah, and I'm going to continue that trend now because I don't fancy him at all. I did a Royal Ascot survival guide for my column on Friday and or Saturday's paper. And one of my kind of survival guide tips was to lay Los Angeles or back something else because, like, I think he gets away with it over a mile and two early on in the season, like he did in the Tattersalls Gold Cup. I just can't see him getting away with it against like really speedy horses. Like, he can't have as much pace as some of these in this race. And he's going to have to grind it out, a proper grind. Maybe, I know Auguste Rodin did it last year, but I think pace-wise, I'd say Auguste Rodin was a faster horse in Los Angeles. Surely had to be. And I just vision, you know, you try and visualise a race, and I just think Ryan is going to try and kind of kick a few lengths clear early in the straight, and you just go through the other horses that are in the race, the Anmats, the Map of Stars, the Ombudsman. You're kind of going, I just have a feeling one of them is going to swoop by him on the outside. I wouldn't be entirely sure which one it's definitely going to be, but I think he will be beaten this week. At the prices I'd be with Ombudsman, he everything he did at Sandown, apart from win, suggested he was a proper Group 1 horse. He's going to improve massively for us, and for all that Los Angeles is a rock solid hardy so-and-so that's very hard to get by, I think they'll get by him.
We'll move on to the Gold Cup. Oh, it's such a shame we don't get to see Kyprios, isn't it? Illinois, will he stay, DJ?
He's a very short price, isn't he? Yeah. Like, it's kind of like, just kind of like, ah, sure, Kyprios is gone, sure, we'll just, Illinois will go in there and he'll just take up where Kyprios left off. I am surprised, and I think they will get closer, Trawlerman and Illinois on the day. But I just watched this French horse, Caltieri, is it?
Yeah.
And I can't wait to speak to our French correspondent, Scott Burton, who's probably the nicest person we work with, is he? Yeah. Scott is up there with the nicest man in the world, like, genuinely nice guy. And he'll have the inside track for me on this guy. But I just watch him. And I know you don't know from his breeding what trip he's going to get. But just watch him. Like, it's mental how... Like, the last day in that Group 1, that new Group 1, it looked like it was going to be a complete blanket finish.
Yeah.
It looked like 200 yards from the line, blanket finish, anything could win this. He won by 3.5 lengths. He would have won by 13.5 lengths if they went another two furlongs. It just looks like he's a relentless galloper. And I just can't wait to see kind of what he can do over 2.5 miles. I think France are going to have an unbelievable week.
Okay.
I really do. I think it's going to be a cracking week for France this week. And you just go through the races, and there's so many fancied runners in so many races. I think they're going to have, I'm going to put my neck on the line and say at least three French winners.
At least three winners, wow. Yeah. First the Six Nations, and then Royal Ascot.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a big week for them. I really do. I'm going to say three or over. I'd like a price in three or over French winners.
Okay, well,
yeah.
If there's any bookmakers listening.
There's none last year.
Liam, we're talking a bit about international. We've got runners from America. We've got a runner from Japan. So important for these international runners. A chance for British racing to be on the global stage.
It is, and you know, it's a meeting that obviously has got a long, winding, excellent history, and to add that international flavour is so important for all the parties involved for this meeting, and it brings, you know, it brings a lot more audience into the 5 days as well. You mentioned, you know, America, and obviously with the French runners, we've seen them over the years in this meeting.
Australia
now, obviously the Kieran Maher horse. So, you know, there's a couple of decent chances there. We could have a Norwegian runner as well. if that horse gets in. So it's so important for the sort of the history of this meeting that we have the international attraction, and you know, hopefully it tempts a lot more connections to do the same if we get a few winners.
How strong's your Norwegian form knowledge, DJ?
Not great, no. Sounds like the Eurovision there, the way all these coming in. No, Norwegian wouldn't be my, Norway wouldn't be my strong point now. Apart from Oslo being the capital, that's as far as it goes. But the Irish, on the Irish Challenge, yeah. The last couple of years, it's been completely dominated by Ballydoyle, which it will be this year. But I just, going through the runners for the week, there are more trainers represented. The likes of Paddy Toomey is bringing a team potentially of five or six and has a few real fancied runners. And it's his first time really coming over with a proper team. His strike rate is absolutely ridiculous, like ridiculous. He's operating at over 30%, I think, for the season and has done for the last couple of seasons. Like he is a brilliant trainer that would not be bringing any horse over here if he didn't think it was a chance. And I know that sounds stupid because that's what most trainers would do anyway, but he's very much, I'm not running a horse in a race that I don't think I have a chance of winning. And Rogue Legend goes in the Windsor Castle, Carmers goes in the Queen's Vase, One Luck goes in the Duke of Cambridge. So he's got a team of horses who are all single figure prices. Yep. And he just could be a trainer to watch out for. I wouldn't be surprised if he hit the target at some stage.
Has the complexion of Royal Ascot changed in the last few years from an Irish view, in the sense of there's more races now, there's more opportunities to have a winner? And how big is it for a flat training Ireland to go and win at Royal Ascot? Because we talk a lot about Cheltenham and the success of Cheltenham. How does it compare on the flat?
Yeah, I always think Royal Ascot is mad because it's so English. Do you know what I mean? It is so English. There's the Union Jacks. It's so posh. And like Irish people shouldn't really like it. Do you know what I mean? Because it's not really Irish. Like if you can imagine, compare Royal Ascot to Listowel or somewhere. Do you know what I mean? Like it's chalk and cheese. But yet we love it. Like because it's just this one week of the year where it's like nothing on earth is like Royal Ascot.
Yeah.
It is just completely different. And the Irish really embrace it. I think it is a massive deal for trainers. I think if you train a Royal Ascot winner, it sets the tone for your season. I think we struggle a little bit in the handicaps. It's a bit different to Cheltenham. I think our handicap marks are a bit trickier over here on the flat compared to over jumps. So I think we will struggle a bit in the handicaps. But I think it certainly is a big deal. I think I wouldn't be surprised. Aidan will obviously have the most Irish winners, but I think there will be potentially one or two other trainers getting in on the act.
I think someone called Willie Mullins might have a few. Yeah. Few hours to fire
a royal runner. From Willie Mullins.
God, that's that'll be interesting with reaching high, and something that I've said as well is like Willie Mullins. Like you probably say Aidan and Willie, right? The greatest trainers of our generation, probably of any generation. And Willie has been given a horse by the King and Queen with the sole purpose of winning a race at Royal Ascot. So if you think of it, like he's had a whole year to basically plan this. And it's been all geared towards the Ascot Stakes.
Yeah.
And I spoke to him after, like, I couldn't believe he was beaten at Leopardstown because it looked like he was up on the bob and then he was beaten. There is a pinch of salt you'd want to put with that form because the winner is a Pat Flynn horse who was very much exposed. So the form isn't great, but they were shocked at how well he ran. Like, they could not believe he was fit enough and ready enough to go as close as he did, for all allowing that the race was obviously very poor. But it keeps coming back in the back of my mind going, Willie Mullins, this is the plan for a year. Give Willie Mullins a plan for a year. He doesn't usually miss. And, you know, the price tens, was it tens last Monday?
Yeah.
Is it 7-2 now? It'll probably go up by 5-2.
Yeah, something like that. I mean, it's just, and I think it's the fact that it's, there's obviously many factors. The fact that it's in the royal colours, the fact that the horse is trained by Willie Mullins, it's probably shortened the price of the horse. So I think it will go off shorter than the price now.
As always with these races, the only thing that can beat Willie Mullins is Willie Mullins because he's also got the Triumph Hurdle winner in there, Poneros. So we'll see how they go. Last point before we get on to Fancy's Liam. Attendances. Now, it's been a bit of a sad picture in British racing. You know, the Cheltenham Festival was obviously quite down. The Derby wasn't particularly good. All different at Royal Ascot. We're up 15,000 from last year. Nick Smith speaking in the Racing Post today. It looks like it's going to be a well-attended meeting, which is a great result.
Yeah, when we see the trend of a lot of these major festivals going the other way and having a lot less, crowds it through the door, it's refreshing to see that it's going the other way for the Royal meeting. It just shows you that, you know, if you can do the right things, then it'll pay off. I think he mentioned on Look on Sunday yesterday that the Windsor enclosure was prices were starting from £25 as well. So to go to, for example, for tomorrow, you could have had a £25 ticket to see the calibre of racing that we'll see on Tuesday, arguably the strongest day of all 5 days. So it's refreshing to see that we're going to hopefully get a bumper crowd there. And I think obviously the weather does play its part. Like it does always.
Like, it is unbelievable this week every year. Like, I've covered Royal Ascot for probably the last 8 years, and especially in recent years. It is, when was the last time it rained during Royal Ascot? Are we talking 4 years ago? So you're talking one out of 20 days in the last four or five years. It is unbelievable.
But it's so consistent over this week as well. I think there was a few years ago it was high 30s, wasn't it? And they had to relax the dress code. It's obviously there's so many different factors, but it's great to see. Hopefully it'll be a proper atmosphere, and it's hard to tell that this will sort of kickstart for the remainder of the year, but it's pleasing to see anyway.
Yeah, the start of that brilliant flat summer of racing in Britain. Let's come on to the important bit then. Let's have some fancies. Liam, what do you like? What's the nap and what else has caught your eye?
The nap, I'd say I like Falakea in the Coronation Stakes. She's obviously been supplemented for this race by Owen Burrows and his team. She's unbeaten. She won really well the last day. I think the fact that obviously Lake Victoria is no longer in that race, I think that's kind of swayed their decision. Obviously Falakea was supposed to go, or she was entered in the Prix de Diane over the weekend. Obviously that didn't come to fruition. Obviously with this race in mind, she's worked well under Jim Crowley there in Lambourne there last week, and I think she can really go well for Owen Burrows, who is having a tremendous season.
Yeah, so, DJ, come on.
How many do you want?
Give us your three.
Okay, I've two. I'll give you one on Tuesday. I'm really keen on Empshire in the Wolferton. Couldn't wait to see what price he was chalked up. Originally it was 8-1. I was like, whoa, 8-1, and then obviously some people got greedy and took that. So I think he's maybe 9-2 now. I loved his run in the Brigadier Gerard. Loved his profile from last year. He's got a similar enough profile to Israel, who won the race last year. And I think what's interesting, Shadwell obviously won the race last year with Israel. Roger Varian has won it twice in the last couple of years as well, I think since 2020. So I'd say this has been a massive target for Empshire. Just everything about him screams Wolferton. And he's drawn stall too. I know inside stalls on the round course over middle distances don't have a particularly good record, but I think for a horse like him who needs a little bit of cover, I think it's fine. So I'd be with Empshire and the Wolferton on Tuesday. A couple of other ones for later in the week. I do think Rogue Legend will win the Windsor Castle for Paddy Toomey. Just that performance at Tipperary was really, really good. So I'd be with him. And give you one just at a big price that I kind of like in the Sandringham. It's... the Sandringham is on. Is it Thursday? I think it is. I think it's 5 o'clock on Thursday. I like Bountiful for George Bowie and Billy Lochnan. Just like the profile. Really like the run last time at Lingfield. Just struck me as a filly that could potentially, win a race like this. And I think the race would be one to suit. So I think Bountiful is around about 20-1.
So I think on that as well. Billy Lochnan was asked the other day about his rides, and he mentioned Bountiful as well as one of the rides he was looking for. Forward to. So DJ mentioned the Windsor Castle. Chiman champion for Richard Hughes, that's won well at Leicester a few weeks ago. 16-1 at the minute. I think he can go well at a good price as well.
Now we're getting more whispers out of him, DJ. Getting more of those lambs.
I'm going to give you one at a massive price. 66-1, right? Probably won't win because 6-6-1. How many 6-6-1 shots win, and how many do you actually tip that win? Zero, I'd say I've tipped. But Ain't Nobody runs in the Commonwealth Cup. Won the Windsor Castle last year, and it wasn't beaten that far in the Sandy Lane, went up with the pace, and I just thought the race wasn't run to suit at all. Probably won't be good enough to win, but I could just see him running an absolute corker, and he's 66-1, and it wouldn't surprise me if he produced a career best in that race. Loves Ascot, the pace of the race will suit. If he gets a good draw, I think he's a horse that gets confidence from passing horses. And at Haydock, he was just bombed. He kind of broke well and was up at the pace. And he's had his two runs now. Shouldn't be 66-1. So I think Ain't Nobody will run well in the Commonwealth Cup.
I like how you said, who tips up 66-1 winners? And you said, nobody. Ain't Nobody is a selection. So it's written in the stars.
Look at that. Look at that.
8 o'clock every morning for DJ on Good Morning Royal Ascot. And if you want my fancies, you'll have to watch the podcast.
No. No, there's people who are making effort to tune into this show. Come on, James Stevens, you're a former NAP Stable champion. We're not letting you away with that.
Yeah, there's not much.
Give us two.
Okay, DJ, yeah, you've got me on the hock. We will go French Master in the Copper Horse on Tuesday. Just feel this horse has got so much more to come. Good winner at Goodwood. Looks like he's going to improve. And the one at a big price, God of War in the Britannia on Thursday. Ran well at Chester last time. I didn't think it was his track. Straight mile, 20-1. Worth an each way playing a race like that. And all proceeds again for a sixth year going to charity causes. So fingers crossed. God of War in the Britannia and French Master in the Copper Horse. We move now to more serious topics. This is the news that the All-Party Parliamentary Group for Racing and Bloodstock, a group of MPs, will speak in Westminster on Monday, warning that British racing is at a tipping point. This due to finances affecting the sport, with the government considering axing its free-tier online gambling tax, where racing is currently treated differently to casino gambling. The current change would treat them level and have a huge impact on racing's finances. This comes at a point where affordability checks are continuing to deprive money from the sport, as well as stall talks regarding the levy continue to put pressure. MPs will tell fellow parliamentarians that racing is at a tipping point. And we've got some interesting data taken from the report in Racing Post on Monday from public interest. 70% agree from the research taken that gambling companies should be required to reinvest some profits into sports they make money from. 66% see racing as an important part of the identity of towns of Newmarket, Doncaster and Cheltenham. We'll see what Liam says that. He's also a correspondent in a regional part of the world with such a huge impact on racing in the economy. 56% support a law requiring greater reinvestment into British horse racing, with only 9% opposed. And perhaps most importantly, this one, 53% of Brits say that horse racing is an important part of British culture. Liam, we know so much about the pressures on the sport's finances. This tax is the latest impact on what's been a growing point. It's almost like the perfect storm, isn't it? Is there hope that the MPs can potentially save or at least help the sport?
Well, you're asking a lot there, but it is a worrying time. Obviously, you read out the stats there. I mean, they don't lie. You know, horse racing is such a big part of many people's lives. It's a livelihood. It pays the bills. You know, it's everything. So these sort of sanctions, the restrictions, however you may see them, they're huge, because it will have a domino effect on many people's lives. So they need to get this sorted, and sorted quickly, because you're almost playing with fire.
You are. We talk about money not in the sport. I suppose, being cynical Racing Post journalists, it always goes back to prize money. Oh, it's going to impact prize money. There's so much more that it affects. It affects rural communities, jobs. It affects impacts in the quality of British racing. There's so many different people who are affected when the sport as a whole is subject to losing money, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, it goes from the very top. You know, you look at how this could affect many different people in the sport. Obviously, race courses, people that work at the race courses, stable staff, trainers, jockeys, you know, everyone. Everyone is heavily reliant on this sport, and it's there to provide funding for people to live, you know. So it's important that we get this right, and get this right quickly.
Yeah, Nick Timothy, who's the Conservative MP for West Suffolk, which includes Newmarket, really crucial quote this. The public will recognise this. Nobody will forgive ministers if their decisions lead to decline of the nation's second biggest spectator sport. The time for warm words has ended. We now demand action. DJ, you're watching this from afar, of course, correspondent in Ireland. It's a worrying time for British racing. How would the situation, when we talk about public interest, public appeal in Ireland, compare? Because it's certainly more of a it's certainly more prominent, isn't it, the public interest in Irish racing, given the reaction.
Geez, you can take British out of that sentence. It's a worrying time for racing, yeah, everywhere, not just Britain. Like, I really do. Like, it's I think I sat in this studio, we spoke about something like this before, and I said like 2025 was going to be a massive year for racing in every sense of racing, be it with the affordability checks and everything that was happening in horse welfare. It's a crucial year, and it's one year we have to get right, and there has to be changes made. And you spoke about the different, you know, the percentages there of people from our report today. And I was at the Thoroughbred Industry Awards, as it is now, used to be known as the Stable Staff Awards in Ireland. I think it was 2 weeks ago, Martin Hayden, who's the Minister for Agriculture in Ireland, spoke at the awards. And it was a little bit reassuring because Martin has a background in racing and worked at Punchestown Racecourse for a couple of summers and stuff like that. And he spoke a lot of sense because it's the behind the scenes stuff that people don't see. So he said, the comment that he said that made me a little bit reassuring from a government point of view with regard to funding is that he said, look, I get invited to these dinners all the time. I have to turn nearly 90% of them down. He said, I was not missing this one. This was one I was not missing. Now, he might have been just playing to the gallery, but even still, he goes, I wasn't missing this one because I know what it's like in these yards, in rural communities, stable staff, and what they do, what they put into it, and how important it is for the economy, especially in rural Ireland. It's massive. And the fact that you've got a Minister for Agriculture in there at the moment who has a knowledge of the industry in Ireland, I think it's massive. I think it's absolutely massive. And just hearing him talk kind of obviously just made me think, you know what, it's good that he's Minister for Agriculture because it just gives us a little bit of safety. But it's really worrying. You read out all those stats there, and I think we are at a tipping point. I think it's going to be a massive couple of months, and look, we need to do something. We need to act fast. It's not a case of they're saying that the time for warm words is over. Like it's now. We need to act, and we need to sort out the future of this sport, because if we don't, you know, it's where are we going to be in, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40 years' time?
It's a very valid point. Just come to you finally, Liam. We're talking about this from the perspective of the media. Down on the ground, people, the trainers, working staff, stable staff, everyone involved in the Lambourne industry, how much of an impact is the current situation having? And is it quite noticeable in your own work?
I wouldn't say it's noticeable, but as we've touched on there, it's racing is much more than just about seeing what happens on the track. You know, it's about getting these horses prepared every single day. And these stable staff, they work 5, 6, 7 days a week. And you know, they're up at the crack of dawn. They ride out. They look after the horses. They muck out. They have a couple of hours in the afternoon. Then they come back and do the same routine again. So, if you took away the sport, you're taking away livelihood of people and how much that these people have put into the sport. And if you took away horse racing, for example, in a place like Lambourne, then you take away everything. Like Lambourne is horse racing. It's named the Valley of the Racehorse. Things like the Lambourne Open Day brings in 15,000 people every year because people want to come in and see how these horses are worked every single day and how these yards operate day to day. So there's a lot of people that would be affected by what's happening and what will happen over the next few months. So it's crucial we get this right.
And of course, the other funding is equine welfare as well, which so much money goes into that. Huge story. We'll find more about it through the week. So do make sure to follow the Racing Post website and the newspaper for all the latest updates, as I'm sure it's going to this story will continue to evolve in the next few days, as will Royal Ascot. We've mentioned it a few times, but do make sure to join us on Racing Post YouTube and social channels for all the latest from, what time is it, DJ? 8 o'clock.
Good morning, Royal Ascot. 8 o'clock, Tuesday to Saturday. Tom Siegel, Paul Keighley, Kevin Blake, Maddie is in for a couple of days. We've got Ali Vance, we've got Martin Dixon. Have a cracking lineup, 8 o'clock. What else would you be doing? Like, when you wake up, what would you rather do? Would you rather go down, have your breakfast, listen to the radio, or look at my ugly mug every day?
You could do both.
Could you? Yeah, you could do both.
Could do both.
No, switch off the radio, look at my three chins, and enjoy yourself.
Okay, well, David might not be getting his marketing job given a self-deprecation there, but do make sure to watch the show. As always, keep an eye on all the content. We'll have lots of live blogs during the week with our fab reporting team there. So very best of luck with Royal Ascot. Enjoy the racing if you are going. And make sure to join us next week again for a wrap-up of Royal Ascot on the Front Page.